You are listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the July episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. July, Rose Manley and Orla Shinawee, what's happened?
You tell us, Richard.
I've actually written at the top of my page here, TCP Femina, and then I've put July in inverted commas at the top of the page.
Let's speak favourably. We wanted to wait until the first Women's World Tour race had restarted the season. So we thought we'd wait until Strade Bianche was done. I was going to say done and dusted. Sorry, everyone uses that with Strade Bianche. Until it was finished. So it was to bring the best possible episode of the podcast. That's why we've delayed it. And I'm sure the next however many minutes will be well worth the wait.
Absolutely. And... the great news is that there's another episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina coming next week. The August episode next week. What a treat.
We're like London anyway, buses, the three of us.
This is a bit like buses here because we've been waiting all summer or 4 months or so for racing. And suddenly there has been quite a lot of racing. It got underway in Spain a good sort of 10 days or so before Strade Bianche, which was the World Tour race, of course, and that was the big one at the weekend. All eyes were on that. And Annemiek van Vleuten, so far 100% record this season, incredibly. So we'll talk a lot about her, I'm sure, in this episode, but we'll hear from some of the other people who put in very strong performances at Strade Bianche in particular. And we're going to basically be talking about Strade Bianche in this episode, aren't we? There's a few other bits and bobs, but do you have a news roundup for us, Orla?
I do indeed, and Kel, surprise, we're going to start with Strade Bianche, because yes, we did get the Women's World Tour 2020 season back underway, and it continued, as you said, Richard, as it had left off for Annemiek van Vleuten, who had won her only race so far of the season, keeping a 100% record for this bizarre year to take the win in her second World Tour race of the year. She had, however, come into this with a hat-trick of wins already at the series of one-day races in Spain in the weeks before. But this one looked less like a foregone conclusion for a while at least, until a magnificent attack brought her to the finish line solo, as is her style. I say magnificent, but perhaps that description best belongs for the day to Mavi Garcia of LABTC Ljubljana, who had attacked from a lead group 45 kilometres from the finish. Now, the Spaniard, who came to bike racing at the relatively ripe age of 31 after switching from duathlon 5 years ago, stayed out in front in the sweltering heat until 7 kilometres to go when, well, what by then felt to be the inevitable happened after the world champion bridged from the peloton to the chasing group, and having pushed on, van Vleuten made the catch before taking that solo win on what was an eerily quiet Piazza del Campo. Now, a fantastic third place as well for Leah Thomas. I should say, sorry, that second went to Mavi Garcia after her magnificent performance. But a fantastic third place for Leah Thomas and her new sponsor, Paul Kah. She dropped a chain and crashed with 17 kilometres to go. She had been trying to chase Garcia down from the escape group of the day, and we watched as she agonisingly tried to get back on the go after fixing her chain when a roadside supporter gave her a push only for her to fall. Again, it looked like the supporter did more harm than good, really. Carol Ann Canuel went past at that stage, but Thomas rode a fantastic final 17k, just avoiding another crash on the run-in to take her podium spot. So much for the curse of the rainbow jersey then. Even with the year that we've had, van Vleuten has now won 5 races from 5 in 2020, 6 in a row if you go back to the World Championships, and that gives her a 100% record since winning the Worlds last year. De Limburger newspaper, which I'm sure you all read avidly, described her as being in cannibalistic form, which you can't argue with. As an aside to Strade Bianche, Trek Segafredo didn't have much luck before the race even began. Thieves broke into the team truck the night before and stole 6 bikes, leaving some of the riders to ride their spare bikes. But the likes of Ellen van Dijk needed to borrow from the men's team. She rode on Kundekort's bike instead. And yet, she was one of the initial group of 11 who broke away. She pushed the pace behind Garcia several times and finished 17th, with teammate Alisa Longoborghini finishing in 5th. In other news, given all the doom and gloom with the lack of racing and predictions of what it might mean for women's racing, isn't it marvellous to follow news of our new sponsor, I say our new sponsor, the World of Women's Cycling, Paul Carr, their entry into women's cycling, with Jumbo Visma's announcement that they're to start a women's team in 2021. Reports in the Dutch media are that Marianne Vos has already signed a two-year contract with the Dutch team, which gives an indication of the calibre of the team that it might be. And there are rumours that they also want to add Annemiek van Vleuten to that roster to make something of a Dutch-flavoured super team to rival the other Dutch super team, Boels Dolmans. That is a little snapshot of your news roundup.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, iWalker. Very pleased that iWalker support the cycling podcast and its various spin-off shows, and that they are proud supporters of the cycling podcast Femina as well, and they also sponsor the Kendal Cycle Club, so they're very much into their cycling. And if you run a small business and you're looking for some help, iWalker are offering their usual flexible loans once again, so go and see what they have to offer at iwalker.co.uk. I should have said at the start, I should have sort of set this up a little bit better by asking where you both were, because you're both in very exotic locations. Rose, yours doesn't look so exotic, but you are in quite an exotic place. Orla, the backdrop is pretty spectacular where you are.
Yeah, mine is good, isn't it? I'm just turning the screen around to give a little
Yeah, that doesn't really work on audio, however.
I was going to describe it. I'm showing you two, but I was going to describe it. I'm sitting on the edge of a Danish lake at sunset with the sky streaked white, pink and blue. It's rather marvellous. I'm in near a place called Haderslev in southern Denmark. We're camping here for a week and then moving on to the delights of Legoland for a few days. My choice, not the five-year-olds. And then Copenhagen. So we're on a little family holiday, finally getting our summer holiday.
Fantastic. And Rose, where are you?
Well, I'm in Milan now because I'm filming with De Kern in Quickstep this week. So Milano Torino, which I've never done before, on Wednesday, and then Milan San Remo on the weekend. But I was before in a much nicer place in Tuscany, in a beautiful Tuscan villa for Strada Bianchi.
Very nice indeed.
Richard, you have to say where you are as well. I'm sure listeners of the regular podcast will know, but for those who only tune into Femina,
we're spread asunder. I'm in France, in my new home in France.
I know. I thought these were supposed to be an unusual year in terms of travel, but we're further apart than ever before.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're in your French villa
In Picardy. So I've been exploring the roads around here on my bike, and that's been great fun. The weather's been fantastic, and it's very quiet. There's nobody here. They're just it's harvest time, so it's just tractors and combine harvesters. It's fantastic.
Et comment tu t'en sors avec le français alors?
It's an English speaking podcast, Orla. Let's save that for the French version, shall we? Shall we save that?
I thought you were going to say it's an English speaking region of France.
But what would we call the French version?
I'm working on that, Orla.
Oh yeah, very true. It would have to be Le Podcast Woman.
Because TCP Féminin, you can't. What can you do with that?
Le Podcast Cyclism Women's doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it?
There you go.
Although there was a move in France to ban the word podcast. They're trying to, I think they're just calling it audio. They're calling podcast in France is quite a lot of rules and regulations around language in France and around names for things.
Well, there's a whole body that's supposed to protect the integrity and consistency of the French language, isn't there?
Yeah, and I know names, like government department. You have to apply to use a name, a certain name for your child. And they're trying to ban the word podcast. So l'audio is what they seem to prefer. So
How do they refer to the rest of the general generic of audio?
Don't know. I haven't been here long enough to dig into that, Orla, but I'll report back.
Okay, report back. We've got a week.
I'll report back next month, which is next week. So anyway, on with the racing. Although before we get started, Bianca, just back briefly on to Jumbo Visma and that news. And we did our special episode a couple of episodes ago, didn't we, on Annemiek van Vleuten, in which she and her coach, Louis de Haye, spoke about her friendship with Marianne Vos and how close they are, which I hadn't realised. And when you speak about them wanting van Vleuten, there are a lot of questions around her team, Mitchelton Scott, at the moment, although she seems very settled there. Teaming up with Vos in a Dutch team would seem to make perfect sense, wouldn't it? And it'd be a pretty formidable duo in that team.
Yeah, it would be like the return of the women's Rabobank team, wouldn't it? And technically, it would be because the men are technically still the same family.
Vos and van Vleuten both started off with Rabobank, of course, and Vos was with that setup for a long time. So, yeah, it's going back in time a little bit, yeah.
Could well be that when Vos gave us that interview that she'd already been in discussions about joining the new team, because we're only getting the news of it now, but I had heard quite a while ago that this was the plan for Jumbo-Visma next year. I was sworn to secrecy, but whenever there was discussions over whether or not, I say discussions, rumours, whether or not they would be taking over Bols Dolmans back then, it was pretty much certain that they were going to be starting their own team. And given the ambition and the direction, certainly of the men's team, I co-presented the launch of it last year. It was live on Dutch Eurosport with all the time and effort and money that involves. You wouldn't be surprised if they'd been speaking to van Vleuten some time ago. But I think it's really exciting. Brilliant.
Absolutely. It's just, further evidence that there are more bigger sponsors coming into the sport, and very encouraging. And we'll hear from Leah Thomas in this episode speaking about her new sponsor Paul Catt. For two big sponsors like that to come into the sport during a pandemic is quite remarkable, really incredible. But we have waited a long time for the return of racing, and I think we were rewarded on Saturday with a pretty exciting Strada Bianca. I mean, I turned it on, I was watching it, and that breakaway had, with strong riders, had a big lead, although I'm not sure how reliable the time, the information we were getting on the time gaps was. Unfortunately, a failure by the TV cameras for whatever reason to pick up on the most significant action in a lot of ways. I mean, we didn't know that van Vleuten had counterattacked behind, that she was approaching, and when we saw the breakaway again, and there was suddenly the world champions jersey, it came as quite a shock, really. I think it came as quite a shock to the riders in that breakaway as well. But I thought we were going to see something quite different, and a winner emerged from that breakaway. In the end, I suppose you could say, well, van Vleuten won again, and there was a predictability about that, but the way that she had to win it made it, a very entertaining race. And Mavi Garcia deserves huge credit, not just for her attack, but for her attitude when van Vleuten caught her, and she didn't accept defeat at that point. She was pretty determined to give her a good race, which she did. And it was a very entertaining race to watch.
I think that is the thing that we are used to seeing actually about an Annemiek van Vleuten win, is that she will attack, and then if she's passing someone, she'll passing someone in the breakaway, she'll just pass them without even looking at them. So it was really interesting actually to see a time when she couldn't actually just cruise past Mavi Garcia and go straight to the finish for a solo win. So huge amount of credit to Mavi Garcia, but I think a lot of people watching it probably thought that she actually had it in the bag, because we were getting all these, like you said, Richard, slightly unreliable time gaps. And I thought for sure, surely that she would make it to the finish first. But it was very exciting and actually nice to see a race that goes all the way into the centre of Siena and hasn't been decided yet, on that real ramp that goes into the central oldest part of the city, and to see that it wasn't decided even then was, yeah, great spectacle.
What was it like to be there? You're obviously working for De Koning Quickstep, but there were decent crowds out at certain points on the course, but in Siena itself, it was obviously very tightly controlled and there weren't a lot of people. But what was it like to be there at the race?
It was a strange one, really. It was actually, in some respects, a little bit busier than I thought it was going to be honest. Because, you know, you have this huge Piazza del Campo, which is the central, you know, the centrepiece of the finish. You know, everyone recognises it. And I thought that whole area would have been completely closed off to the public. But actually, all of the bars and restaurants around the edge of the campo were still open. So it still had all tourists there. And the actual area in which the actual finishing area was probably smaller than it normally is, so that when the riders had finished and were leaving, they were just kind of put out into the public. And there were a huge amount of people who weren't wearing masks. And we kind of got used to not being anywhere near people, always wearing masks, being really careful, you know, who you interact with. And yeah, it was a bit odd. They had to go this incredibly steep ramp once they finished to get out and go back to the buses, and you know, all the riders were, faces were just covered in dust, they were all exhausted, they were all lying around everywhere, people having water being poured on their heads, incredibly thirsty, incredibly exhausted, and then having to cycle up through the public through this kind of steep ramp. I think I saw Cecily Utrup-Ludwig actually had to get off of her bike and walk her bike up to get back to the buses.
That's so mean, putting such a steep ramp after that race in, what, 37 degrees?
I know. I mean, obviously, I saw...
Blinking heck, a bit of mercy.
Yeah, I saw Marianne Vos just... Obviously, she just took it like a something out of a cyclocross thing and then just, you know, went straight up it and out. But it was kind of... it was a little bit odd, but yeah, that it... Yeah, I mean, I have to say I did watch today, actually, the highlights of last year's race, because I kind of wanted a bit more of a comparison. And I was kind of shocked watching it about how busy, actually, it normally is. But, I mean, really, it was, I think the biggest difference in the race was not so much the kind of protocols, but more that the heat and the state of the terrain of the white roads in the race was completely different to how it normally is when it's raced in early spring, completely different.
I tell you what I find quite sad was that I was expecting to see completely empty roads anyway and for Siena to be completely empty. And what I find really touching was to see all the race barriers put up as usual, so lining the roads into the finish line, but there being nobody there to cheer everyone on. And you would think if the barriers are there, then maybe people might come out, you know, and stay socially distant. But to have the barriers and nobody almost highlighted even more the fact that there was no one there. And it was that old, you know, if a tree falls in the wood and there's no one there to hear it. Thank goodness for television cameras. But it certainly took away for me a little bit of the magnificence of that finale, you know, and it just, I guess, reinforces what we all know and have always known, how much of a difference fans make and how they are the lifeblood of the sport, you know, just that emptiness and the contrast of what you usually see. I just find really, yeah, quite sorrowful.
Although the finish is almost like an amphitheatre in its shape, and it's strange to have this big amphitheatre, you know, it should be projecting all this sound and then not to have the sound. But but yes, still an amazing race to watch. Amazing.
Well, we'll hear a bit about Mavi Garcia in a moment, but let's hear from Leah Thomas, who finished third. She actually talks about the ride up the climb into the finish, saying that, yeah, there weren't the usual big crowds, but there were a few people, and they were. She heard her voices very loudly because they were echoing. You know, it's a very kind of echoey, eerie place, really. But you know, that she did remark on that and say that actually did make a difference. There weren't many people there, but the people that were there really made themselves heard. She did an amazing ride. She was in that big move. She was one of the most aggressive riders from that move. And she and Mavi Garcia really were the two who deserved probably to finish on the podium, and they did. Leah Thomas had some bad luck as well, but she came through that and she managed to hold on to third. And you felt like, you know, that some of the other big hitters were coming up pretty fast from behind. Anna van der Breggen was fourth. Lisa Longo Borghini was fifth. Marina Voss was sixth. So they were coming, weren't they? And Mavi Garcia and Leah Thomas did really well to hold them off. But great performances and great results for them. And Leah Thomas, well, let's hear from her now. She's just signed an extension with Equipe Polkas, as they're known, the team that was Bigla Katusha. And she was reflecting today, Monday, on her performance 48 hours earlier.
So how I went through the break is I did like a little bit of a move on that first gravel section just to kind of see how people were climbing, and I could tell people were suffering. So I figured on the next one, I'm going to lay down my attack. That's the one where I dropped my chain. And I got a good gap, and my thought was like, this is my move. I'm committed to this. I have no idea what's happening behind me. Hopefully I can get over the next steep climb. I'm sure Annemiek will try to bridge, you know, like she obviously wants to win this race, and she has proven time and time again, she can bring back a lot of time relatively quickly, and that she also can go solo for an extended period of time. So when she showed up, I wasn't surprised that she was there. I kind of wished it was a little bit later, but it is what it is. So.
Yeah, I mean, what's that moment like when you turn around and see her there in the rainbow jersey as well? Must make it even more daunting in a way.
I mean, she's an absolutely fantastic rider and proves herself every single race that she's in that she deserves to be in that jersey, and that she deserves everything that she's gotten, you know, and that she can win so many different races. But instead of it being daunting, I try to look at it as a challenge and an opportunity to push myself and see like where I should keep improving and how I need to do better. And like, what can I do differently next time in the race to make it that a little more difficult, if not, you know, maybe she won't win one of these, you know? And so it wasn't like I saw her and I instantly thought like, well, this is over, you know, it was like, okay, it's hot and I've been in a break and been working and I've done all these attacks and I've had to bridge back from my mechanical, which took forever, and like all this stuff, like, let's just see where we're at and then just keep fighting from there. And like, all I can do is keep pushing forward and trying to make the best decisions tactically as I can and make the best decisions, knowing what my body is feeling as I can and how the cards fall.
So. I mean, we saw you were aggressive yourself, and we saw you off the front with the mechanical problem, the drop chain. And then I think, you know, you came off again there as well. How you lost time, but how difficult was it there to just keep focused mentally as well?
I don't even want to say it was necessarily difficult. For me, I feel like when I'm in a race and something bad happens, maybe this is a strength, but like, I tend not to panic. It's kind of like, well, this is what it is. I have to deal with it. Panicking isn't going to help with any of this. So for me, it was just like, okay, I'll get my chain on, and then I get pushed and fall off my bike and have to get my chain on again. It's like, well, that is what it is. And I got back with the brake really quickly, and Caroline was right up the road, and I felt good, you know, like this was my move. I was planning to make a big effort for a long time. And so I knew I had to bridge up to her and, you know, keep going. And this time it'd be Caroline and I. And still, at this point in the race, we had no idea Annemiek was, at least I had no idea Annemiek was where she was, you know. And so in my head, I was like, okay, like working with Caroline, maybe that's not so bad. I have an extra person and we have a decent way to go still. And so we can both help each other at this point in the race and try to, like, bring back Mavi. And I think mentally it wasn't super hard because I wasn't yet in a place where, you know, you are in the like complete hurt box. If this had happened, you know, 5K from the race when I really was really suffering, I might have had a different mental outlook at the time. But at that point in time, it was pretty easy to stay positive and keep racing forward.
Well, yeah, there was still a lot to race for. And you know, you were the second survivor of the break. The riders, you know, quite a few were coming up quite quickly from behind as well as Van Vleuten. And you held on for third. You know, coming into that historic finish in Siena. How did that feel to know that you were on the podium?
It felt pretty awesome. I didn't know I was on the podium I had the potential to keep a podium spot until maybe 5K to go. That was like the first time I was able to have contact with my team car. So that gave me the extra motivation to really keep pushing, because those last few K were really mentally tough and physically tough. But you enter the city, and even though, like, you know, there weren't a lot of spectators and everything appropriately, you know, there still were people that were cheering, and like, because of how the walls are, it all echoes, and like, it still was really exciting. And just to know you're finishing such an iconic race, and you put your best foot forward and you raced the best that you could, and you took whatever problems arose in the race and you did your best with them and kept fighting, you know, that's all you can really ask for. And so it was just really special to cross that line. And also really glad that I could be done working.
And, you know, a significant moment, because it was also your first outing for your new sponsor. How big a deal was that? I mean, that must have felt like a responsibility too, but I'm guessing in a positive way, the pressure must have been positive, because it's obviously been great news that this big sponsor's come into women's cycling. I mean, how did that figure in your thoughts during the race itself?
Absolutely. I mean, for the fact that Paul Kaw was willing to come on in the middle of a pandemic with so much uncertainty, and not only sign a contract to support our team, but like to sign through 2024, to make a long-term commitment, to be involved in cycling, to provide a budget that allows us to really develop. You know, our team's about development and making riders better and learning and being aggressive and all these things. And so it felt really special to be able to kind of put an exclamation point on that whole process. You know, they took a gamble. Who knew what was going to happen with bike racing, you know? And to be able to thank them for giving us this opportunity to line up on, you know, one of the biggest races of the year, is huge. And I'm really grateful that they were willing to do that and could have the foresight to see that, you know, we can contribute and give back as well. And I'm just really glad they came on board. And I'm really glad that as a team, we could pay them back with a really good result.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting Cycling Podcast Femina, as they have done since 2016. And you can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. I'm not going to ask you to sing it this time, because I think with these dodgy phone connections, it could be even more of a mess than usual. But so before the break there, we heard from Leah Thomas of Equipe Polka, and a great ride by her. That we speak a lot to Lizzie Banks, of course, who presents Service Course, and she always talks about the great team spirit they have and the sense they have of being quite a kind of democratic outfit. You know, in the past they've had leaders, and they don't really have a clear leader now, and so there are quite a few of them who get opportunities, and they are taking them when they get them. But Mavi Garcia was the other story of the day, really, apart from Annemiek van Vleuten, of course, but we've spoken about her a lot, and if you want to know more about her, listen to the episode a couple of episodes ago. But Mavi Garcia, not somebody a lot of us would have known an awful lot about. She's 36, as you said, Orla, she came to the sport pretty late. And in order to sort of understand a bit more about her, you, Rose, spoke to a Spanish journalist, didn't you?
Yeah, so Yolanda Alvarez, she's the go-to woman on Spanish women cycling apps, if not just women cycling generally. And so I was trying to pick her brains a bit about Mavi Garcia. And I think if anyone does recognise the name, it'll be from the Tour de Yorkshire last year, when Mavi Garcia, Soraya Paladin and Marina Voss made a little three-way break. And then they got to the finish, do you remember, and the wind was incredibly strong. Their bikes were going kind of off sideways, and they had to do a sprint at the end of doing this really, really long breakaway. So that's where people might have remembered her name from. But Although we might have only been paying attention to her for the last year, Yolanda has been watching her progress over the last 5 years. So this is what Yolanda had to say about Mavi Garcia. Did you think Mavi was going to make it to the finish?
Well, seeing how fast Annemiek was coming to her, I was starting to think she's not going to make it. In fact, what I was really thinking is that Annemiek is going to cut her before she did, and that Mavi maybe would be dropped before. But also knowing Mavi a bit, I knew that she would start, you know, pacing her tempo and just to know very well how to preserve energy and to try to stay with Annemiek. So, of course, I had hopes that she could make it, even knowing that it would be very difficult. But anyway, for me, I felt it like a victory, like she did. She was amazing, and I was very pleased. And really what she said after the race is that for her it felt like a victory. So It was a huge joy to see her there.
And of course, she's actually suddenly emerged as a great rival to Annemiek now this year because of her performance at the Navarra Classicoa as well.
Yes.
Is this going to be her breakthrough? Well, a bit of a strange season, but a breakthrough season for her?
I think so, because she hasn't had the opportunity to show herself in the past year, especially because of crashes that she had, both in races. For example, in Liège 2 years ago, she broke her collarbone while she was racing, and then that prevented her to shine in the races that were coming. And also, she was very fit, for example, for Giro last year, and she was training in altitude in Sierra Nevada. She crashed while training just before the Giro was going to start. So that was such a disappointment because she was in the form of her life. And I really think everyone was thinking around herself that Giro she could do something very interesting and be there fighting for the GC. So what happens with Mavi is that now, I think thanks to lockdown, she has been training very well, very safely. She has been concentrated very, very much on doing that and taking the most of the situation. Also being in the Alea BTC team has come as an extra motivation for her. So, I mean, in the few races that we've had, now in the last weeks, she has proved what she has got. So yeah, for me, the breakthrough is already here. I mean, she has shown internationally what she's capable of. Everyone is recognizing her already because of her crazy attacks, very, very long, very far away from the finish, like she did in Yorkshire, where she went solo with 70 kilometers to go or something that. And then she was followed by Marianne Vos, if you remember, and Soraya Paladin. And in the end, that was the final podium.
What a crazy finish that one was as well, after having those three breakaway.
Yeah, that was very windy. And I think that was the first. Also, she had been solo in Plouay. But that was a very strong attack, and it caught the attention of many people too. So we have had, you know, sparks of Mavi in the past 2-3 years. We have had some.
And do you think, you know, doing these crazy attacks, do you think she has learned better about how to make the, you know, a crazy attack actually stick and actually get a great result out of attacking like that?
I think what happened in the past is that she was not known, and people were letting her go, thinking that, you know, she's not that strong and nothing will happen. I think that is going to change dramatically now, because now everyone is going to watch after her. So I don't know to what extent she will be capable of doing the same from now on, because she will be watched. But it's her way of racing. I mean, since her first year in Vizcaya Durango in 2015, that is her first year as a cyclist. In the Spanish Cup races, she was attacking with 50 kilometers to go, with 40 kilometers to go. She was going solo to the finish. She has always done that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's her way. She gets very nervous in the peloton. She doesn't have, or she didn't have in the past, the same skills as the rest. So she was getting very nervous. She was losing a lot of position in the peloton. She didn't like it. So the best thing that you can do to get rid of all that tension is going to the front and going solo. That is what she was doing always. That is her style. She knows that she has nothing to do in a sprint if she gets with a little group or with someone else. She's quite slow, and she trusts her strength, I think.
And her bike skills might not be as developed as the other riders, well, certainly a few years ago, because she came to cycling quite late. Can you tell us a bit more about her background?
Her first sport was figure skating.
She, oh, really?
She was very good.
Wasn't
it? Yes. She started as a kid, as a child, doing that. And I think I've heard that she was very good in that also. And then I think when she was 25 years old or something like that, she took up athletics. She started to take duathlon races, where she started with a bike. And soon people saw herself that she was better in the bike, on the bike, than on the running. So this is when Vizcaya Durango saw her, and she started her first season with Vizcaya Durango was in 2015. Everyone in the team was very impressed with her potential, because by that time she was absolutely scared of riding in the peloton. And she is still something now, the fear of riding in the peloton has disappeared, but still she's quite afraid of the descents. And I don't know if you noticed in Strade, I mean, I think that Annemiek, most of the time that she took on Mavi was on the descents. Annemiek, I don't think, took that much on the climbs, but on the descents, it's still a bit painful to see Mavi. She's insecure, she's afraid. Also, she has had some crashes in descents, you know, in the past. So she has to gain more confidence on that. And it's a question of time and races, and that will come. She spent 3 years in Vizcaya Durango. Practically all the races that she took part on, she was winning them. By that time, when she was in Vizcaya Durango, she was combining duathlon races with the Spanish Cup races, which was and working full time during the day, which is something amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. When she won the Spanish Road Race, the championships, in 2016. So she came to the race the day before. The day before, she had broken a piece on the frame of her bike. And they didn't have the time. They didn't have the time to fix it. So she rode that race with a piece on the frame that was, not fixed. Something was broken. So she had to race with that. And still she won the race with that bike. That is a very funny anecdote.
Wow.
Yes. Vizcaya Durango was an amazing school for her. And then when Movistar started, they took her in their team. And from the Movistar times is when she was doing her most visible performances.
And she's now at LA, and what do you think she can gain from being at that team?
I think I was a bit surprised about her move to LA. I was with her in Ardèche last year when all the transfer season started. I was talking to her and she told me that she needed the motivation. So the reason was mainly that after being 2 years in Movistar, this opportunity came. Ale called her and she said that why not? She had always been in a Spanish team, and it's obvious that she's very motivated. So I had my doubts about that move, but now I see that she's very happy. So I'm happy for her.
And she's an incredibly graceful rider, isn't she? Her style is just the most beautiful
style. Her style is very beautiful. It's like she's not doing any effort at all, right? Yes, but it's a pleasure to watch her, really. And then as a person, this is important. Also, she's a wonderful person. She's very kind. She's, very well known for her kindness and for being super friendly with everyone. She's a very good teammate. I don't know. She's a wonderful person, really.
I think we saw that actually at the end of Strade Bianche. Her going, I mean, while Annemiek was still on the floor recovering, to go over and congratulate her.
Yes. She came with a huge smile. She admires Annemiek very much, and she's always with that huge, broad smile on her face. And no matter what happens, she's always with a huge smile.
Well, that was Yolanda Alvarez on Mavi Garcia. Really interesting. Well, lots of interesting things there, but really interesting the theory about having had the time, you know, that COVID, and we've spoken about this a bit in the other podcast as well, about how for some writers, it will have been an opportunity to really train and live exactly how they want without pesky races getting in the way. And also for a writer like her, who's quite new to the sport still, to maybe work on some of the things that she struggles with. I mean, it was interesting to hear how much of a problem it is riding in the peloton, and, you know, why that's why she likes to be up the road. And, you know, the results are not necessarily reflective of the talent a lot of the time in cycling.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting because the fact that she also was so strong in the three Spanish races. I mean, she came second to Annemiek van Vleuten in one of them, and in the other two, she was, you know, she made solo breaks in both of them. So it just shows you she's come back from this lockdown, and then she's had this incredible form that she's been able now to take into the racing in her own particular style. It's been really interesting, and it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how long that kind of conditioning and form that she will have built up in lockdown will last in the season, when it's quite a compact and very busy season.
I think her return as well has been exactly the kind of thing that we've been hoping for. You know, we've been talking in this sort of pause period about wondering how riders are going to be coping and dealing and comparing how they come back. And I think we've been hoping for someone to sort of surprise us ever so slightly. And that's not to say that she's a surprise, you know. I mean, she's been a Spanish national champion, but the strength that she's shown is not something maybe we would have predicted. We wouldn't have put her right up there, you know, top five in these kinds of races, and certainly to perform Strada Bianchi the way that she did, not just the result, but the way she achieved that result. Yeah, I think she's exactly that kind of spice that we were hoping that the break in the season would throw up. So, yeah, great to see. Long may it continue, I think.
Yeah, we haven't seen it so much in the men's racing yet, but we expected, I think, to be surprised by one or two riders when racing did start up. And I think she's the standout, really, in all that. I mean, it is a peculiar time, of course. And Rose, you talked about the you know, the strange kind of nature of Siena and all the protocols around racing and so on. And as we said earlier, the racing did start a little bit earlier for the women in Spain. And Orla, you spoke to Ellen van Dijk about those races and how she'd found it and how she'd found the protocols. And I spoke to, again, Leah Thomas on that, and she had some quite interesting things to say about it too. So let's hear from them now. Ellen van Dijk of Trek Segafredo and Leah Thomas again from Equipe Polka.
Yeah, it was a bit uncertain in the beginning, but yeah, we were all super happy to race again. And yeah, as a team, we were super strong straight from the beginning. So it was just, very exciting.
Tell me about the protocols and how the race differed from what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, so for sure, everybody has to do the test before you can enter the race. So you have to arrange this COVID test somewhere and prove that you're not infected. Next to that, you have to wear the face mask before the start. As long as you keep riding on your bike, you don't have to wear your face mask. But as soon as you get off the bike or you stand still, you need to wear it. A lot of this disinfection and these kind of things. And we try to stay in our team bubble as much as possible.
And of course, staying in your team bubble is quite easy outside of the race, or relatively easy, I guess. But once the race gets started, that's it. You're literally right beside each other. Was there any kind of nervousness about that, or any chat about how old that was, I guess?
I didn't feel it, really. I didn't really feel the nervousness, but more maybe that everybody was looking for, to see where their level is at the moment, because, of course, everybody hasn't been racing for a long period of time, so... Yeah, for sure, you could feel the excitement in the bunch. And even when we started the first race in Spain, after the neutralization, everybody was giving a little shout out, like, yeah, we're going. So that was good.
It must have been quite surreal, that, I guess, because as a professional cyclist, you kind of hop on that treadmill and you keep going until you retire. There's not really a break in the normal run of things. So I guess having this enforced break and then everybody getting back together again, was it a bit like... quite a happy first day back at school?
Yeah, it felt a bit like that indeed. But also, like, we didn't see each other in real life for, I don't know, 5-4 months or however long it was. But then you're back together and then it straight away feels familiar again. Like, everybody is still the same. Everybody is still doing the same things. And yeah, you're actually a well-oiled machine. So yeah, it comes back quickly.
And in terms of the COVID protocol, CCC had pulled out of the first race because they said that not all teams had to test their riders. So there was no guarantee as to whether everyone had been tested. And the Cyclists Alliance had also said that they didn't feel that that enough measures were guaranteed to have been taken. What was the feeling amongst you guys, and what was your feeling personally about any of that?
So yeah, this was definitely the case, but then because the Cyclists Alliance addressed this also, then the organization, they said, okay, then we make this rule out, and if you cannot approve that you're negative, that you did a test which was negative, then you're not allowed to start. So therefore, we could make sure that the peloton was safe, and a lot of girls didn't start in the first race. So in the beginning it wasn't mandatory to share the results of your test, so that's why a lot of teams came there, and then they couldn't prove that they are not infected, so they were not allowed to start. So yeah, the organization did a good job in that as well.
Do you feel confident that things are properly in place as they should be to keep you all safe and to keep you racing within the constrictions of the current climate?
Yeah, I feel safe. I mean, traveling is still a bit challenging. I mean, yeah, you travel and you are alone among other people sometimes. So, of course, it's not perfect, but I'm just super happy that we can resume the season and that it's all possible in this way.
I think that we're doing that they're setting up policies that are really trying to make this as safe as possible. The problem is, you know, the idea is you get tested 6 days out, and then you join your team, and then you're kind of in like a team bubble, and then you get tested 3 days out, and then you kind of join the peloton bubble, right? And everybody, you know, has been tested, and you know that nobody has coronavirus and all this stuff. The problem is it's not a closed entity, right? Like, you're interacting with hotel staff, you're interacting, Swannies have to go to the grocery store, you're in the community still. And so it's definitely appropriate to do these tests, and it definitely lowers the risk factor significantly. But like all the other stuff about still, you know, wearing your mask and like all that is still really important, because you just never know what could happen. And the nice thing about racing in Italy is, like, as a country, they have so few cases that it really felt really safe to be there. Everybody did a really good job. The hotel was great. The race organizing was great. Everything felt awesome. So hopefully we can continue down in that direction. But, you know, COVID tests are great, but we're still moving around. And so it's important to keep that in mind, like, as a whole community, as we move around, because it only takes one person to, you know.
So interesting to hear Ellen van Dijk and Leah Thomas talk about the things that they're going through in order to race and how they feel the organisers are managing things too. It feels all very fragile, doesn't it? And there, you know, we kind of just keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best in some respects with some of these races. But it's been great to see a bit of bike racing anyway, and to feel that, I mean, you mentioned the lack of crowds, Orla, and I do agree that crowds do add a different dimension to racing, but I don't think my enjoyment of Strada Bianchi was diminished too much by there not being crowds. I don't think they're as essential in cycling as they are in certain other sports to creating, you know, an atmosphere, a kind of sense of a big occasion. You know, the star of cycling is the landscape, and especially at that race over those roads, crowds add something, but they're not the be all and end all.
I don't know. I actually disagree, I think, with that. Just because you're right in the sense it's not like football. It's not like they're playing to a noticeably empty stadium, and the action does take place on the road regardless of what, you know, there's no momentum behind any fan support in the way that that fans in a football stadium can carry a team, essentially. But I feel it misses a bit of that magnificence. It misses a little bit of what makes, you know, I always think with sport, it's like what I said earlier, you know, if a tree falls in a wood, and there's no one there to hear it. Yes, it's wonderful to watch, but you don't get a sense of the joy that it brings, you know, and how much it matters to people. And I think that's what cycling is, really, you know, and it's the craziness of people on the side of the road and, you know, with their flags draping behind them as they're running alongside the riders and swigging their beers and whatever it might be. I think that even on television, even at a distance, that's what I enjoy watching, is not as much as the racing, obviously, but I think it massively enhances it, personally.
I would say it probably, yeah, depends on the race. I kind of agree with Richard on that. I don't think it changed Strada Bianchi for me, personally, because I mean there was the odd fan, but you know the landscapes are so spectacular with all that dust rising. There were so many thrills and spills. There were crashes, mechanicals, punctures, attacks. I think if the racing itself is thrilling enough, then you know, I don't think it misses the fans. And also, I mean, if it can happen because there are no fans, then that, you know, that's the important thing, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's better to have the racing without the fans than not have racing at all. I just personally, I feel it lacks something significant for me, something noticeable.
Well, listen, we've got another episode next week. Should we wrap things up for this week?
Well, I'm not left to talk about.
Before we go, we should say, you know, a lot of bad luck stories at the weekend. But Ashley Moulman Paseo,
oh, yeah.
How much bad luck does she have? Mm. She crashed training for Strada Bianchi, and I think she had 60 stitches.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously in a bad way, and she's had so many crashes and bad luck, and she was going extremely well. You know, she was one of the stars of Lockdown, if you like,
Zwift,
with all the Zwift racing and so on. Mm. But a real shame, and I hope we see her back soon. I mentioned earlier as well, Equipe Polka don't have a leader as such, but maybe Clara Koppenberg will be that rider. And she also had a crash at the weekend, so didn't manage to finish Strada Bianchi. So hope she's back soon as well.
I did actually, one of the things I did hear from the riders was that because of Strada Bianchi taking place in summer where there hadn't been any rain, it actually made the gravel roads much more vicious. So, you know, it was much more compacted and the gravel was much more loose on top. So that's why there were actually quite a few crashes and punches and things during the race. And it did mean that when riders fell, they fell really, really hard because their wheel would go from under them. And they would hit the ground really hard. So it was a shame not to see Clara or Ashley get to perform all the way through the
race. Because she'd also been riding very well in Spain, Clara Koppenberg.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think people think gravel, oh, it's, you know, it's not really road. You know, it's, you get a bit of a softer landing. But actually, I think you can do yourself a lot more damage on gravel. And you know, these big rocks that are there, I mean, really... Yeah, we saw some of the injuries or heard about them. Nasty, nasty. So hope Clara Koppenberg and Ashley Moulman Paseo are back racing again soon. Orla, you must be off to look for woods falling in trees or listen out for them.
Yeah, I'm surrounded by trees. Maybe that's why that came to me so much in that podcast. Yeah, I'll go and find some. I'll go and find some. Although maybe I won't, because if I watch it, then it will have fallen, you know? I'll have heard it. So maybe I need to not
ruin
find.
It.
Yeah,
and
not ruin it.
Yeah.
Then I'll never know. So we'll never know either way. What if I sort of turn my back as I know it's about to fall?
The question is whether if nobody sees it, whether it makes a sound. But if you see it...
Well, what I could do is just sort of wander around the trees behind me and then keep checking on them for the week that I'm here and then see if one has fallen while we haven't been looking. Then we've got proof, yeah? Shall I do that?
I think I'll follow. Well, we'll let...
Have I lost you both? Have we lost Wi-Fi or just lost the will to continue?
I think I just fell down a philosophy rabbit hole there. I couldn't find my way out.
I'll claw my way back up again.
Well, we will let you go, Orla, because I mean, we were chatting before we started recording. I said, oh, you said it was the first night of your holiday. I said, oh, sorry to ruin the first night of your holiday. by having to do the podcast. And I expect you to say, oh, no, it's a pleasure. It's, I enjoy it. But you agreed with me, which was very disappointing.
I disagree with you.
You didn't disagree.
I said, I should be with my family right now. Well, I said, yeah, I should be with my family right now, but... they don't listen to this, so I can say. I also said I was quite glad to get away from them for a little bit because it's the only piece of quiet I've had all day. plus, we actually watched Strada Bianche in the camper van on the way here on Saturday. And like half an hour in, my husband was like, really? Do we need to have that on the whole way? I'm like, honey, yes, we do. Suck it up and drive, please.
The great news for you and your holiday, Orla, is that you'll be able to spend an hour away from them next week as well. So
I know exactly.
Fantastic.
Exactly. So you might get to hear all about my trip to Legoland.
We'll be speaking to you from Legoland.
Tune in next week.
Yeah. Great. Well, until then, thank you very much, Orla.
Thank you both.
And Rose, enjoy your time in Italy.
Thank you, with my slightly unconventional Belgian family.
Your Belgian bubble. Your boule belge.